Welcome to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
And here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers!
You know, as part of legacy, I want those shots. I want the big-time plays.
Keep our heads up onto the next one.
Just a flurry of moves by the Joker.
Are you kidding me, Joker?
The Lakers' biggest deficit of this year's playoffs. Lakers keep on coming.
18-2 run.
How about Murray?
Oh, just pours it in.
8-point win in game three.
Ooh, we got a series. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. Today, I am joined by an esteemed panel. We got NBA champ Richard Jefferson sitting here with me in the arena. We got 2004 NBA Finals MVP Mr. Big Shot Chauncey Billups and our NBA senior writer, host of the Low Post podcast, Zach Lowe. I didn't do the pause right, Zach. I tried. Coming up, what is the biggest adjustment the Heat need to make for Game 4 tonight? We will preview the Eastern Conference Finals later. But first, so last year, after the Nuggets were eliminated from the playoffs in a Game 7, Jamal Murray went to coach Michael Malone and complained. He didn't like that Malone kept talking about how, quote, inconsistent he was. He didn't like it, Jamal said, because he knew it was true. Now, fast forward to this postseason. The Nuggets have won not just one, but two Game 7s, part of a run of six straight elimination wins. And Murray, well, I guess you could say he's still a little bit inconsistent, because on some nights he's merely an absolute star, and on other nights he's an actual supernova. Last night, yep, we got the exploding flames of basketball version, exactly when the Nuggets needed him most. Denver had led Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals by as many as 20 points, but the Lakers had come roaring back in the fourth quarter, violently closing the gap with five steals in 2 minutes, part of a 22-6 run. LA was looming. Denver needed something spectacular, and they got it from Murray. First with this little dance with Alex Caruso. Ooh, that is beautiful. Then again with Caruso on him, a savvy back and forth with Paul Millsap. Money. And then the moonshot at the end of the game. This time it was 6'10" Anthony Davis who switched on to Murray, who in turn gave himself some space and then launched. Please note how wide the camera shot is there, and yet the ball still leaves the top of your screen before plummeting back to earth.
They even follow through.
We had a little shuffle shake for Murray there. Not quite the Sam Cassell dance, but honestly, if Jamal had done that, it would have been appropriate. Take a look at how big Murray has come up this postseason when the pressure is on. He is shooting 73% from three in clutch time, which is when the score is within five in the game's final minutes. No one has ever done that before, not even three-point maestro Steph Curry, and it's that, well, consistency that has put the Nuggets back in the thick of this series. Of course, Murray, not the only standout last night. Nikola Jokic, man, continues to be the smoothest center in the game. Jeremy Grant had his best ever playoff outing, scoring 26. And Paul Millsap, he was once again extremely strong on AD, who in this series is shooting just 25% when Millsap is his primary defender, compared to the 65% AD is shooting when he's checked by anyone else. Millsap also held LeBron scoreless when defending him, which is significant when you consider that coming into this night, Millsap had lost to LeBron in, let's count them, one, two, three, four.
This is mean.
Five, six.
Six.
Seven.
It's not mean.
Eight,
the truth is not mean.
Nine.
The truth is not mean.
10 straight playoff games.
Not in professional sports.
I mean, that's just demoralizing. It's beyond even a Michael Jordan, Patrick Ewing level of dominance. But with this Nuggets victory, Millsap finally broke the streak. Of course, now the question is, can he and Denver add another W to the ledger? The Lakers aren't going to back down quietly here and have plenty left in their arsenal. For example, AD didn't grab a single rebound last night until the final 5 minutes of the game. I wouldn't expect that to happen again. Still, here is what else I know. This year, it's not last year. This year, whatever happens, Murray is going to be a factor, a big, bright, shining star. And he's going to do it consistently. So, Chauncey, who do you think is a bigger problem for the Lakers right now, Nikola Jokic or the supernova Jamal Murray?
Yeah, that's a tough one, Rach. It really is. I mean, I expect Jokic to go get a triple-double. But to me, the biggest problem is Jamal Murray, and here's why. so explosive. He's so explosive. I mean, he can go out there and get you 50 on back-to-back nights if need be. Joker can get you a 30-point triple-double, impact the offensive end in a major way. But this dude right here is must-see TV. He's on fire. He found something out last night with everybody guarding him. And he's in a rhythm, but he's just so explosive. I think he is the issue for the Lakers right now.
To me, they're inextricably linked, right? They're a two-man game. They amplify each other. They work so well together. And anytime, you guys know this, anytime you have a pick-and-roll partnership where both guys can score from anywhere on the floor, there's no one answer to that. There's no single coverage for that. Jokic, though, is the more unique player, a big guy who can shoot threes and post up like an old-school big guy. You just don't see that anymore, let alone the passing skills. So in general, he's the bigger problem, but they're just so inextricably tied together, it hurts to separate them.
Yeah, no, I agree with Zach. There is no way to separate them. Even if you look at who the Lakers played in the prior series, you could double team James Harden and not really have to worry about, you know, Russell Westbrook beating you from three. You can double team Dame Lillard and force other guys to beat you. If you double team Jamal Murray, then you're pretty much putting the ball in the hands of the best passing big man that we've ever seen, a guy that can knock down threes, he can make layups, he can shoot floaters, big or small. So it's really the problem, and that's what it is. If you take away one, you're actually taking away the advantage of the other player also. So you got to pair them up, and that's why they're in the Western Conference Finals and why they're so special.
So question to y'all two. The first two games, Jamal wasn't explosive. He didn't go crazy, did he? They lost both games. Joker did work. He had 30 points. He had a triple. He did his thing. Jamal Murray went crazy, and they won the game.
Yeah, but Chauncey, this is the only problem with your argument, and it's not that much of a problem, is that a lot of players, if they go crazy, their team is going to win the game, right? And if you look at what Anthony Davis did in game two, they're one shot away from being up 2-1 in this series. And so, you know, I agree with you. Like, Jokic is the beacon of consistency. He is the reason why his team every day has a chance. And Jamal Murray is often the reason why they get over the top against some of these great teams.
But I was so interested that his great performance last night, it doesn't have to be a 50-point outing, right? It was the numbers he put up all across the stat category and the timeliness. Mm-hmm. That 73% from three in clutch time,
it's just,
I mean, it's insane. And it's actually only part of it, that playmaking that he has added to his game, again, in the clutch when his team absolutely needs him, the timing, the leadership that he's shown. He is just a different kid from who I saw in the playoffs last year. And I think it's so impressive. Now, since we have Mr. Big Shot Chauncey with us today, it is time for the Big Shot Breakdown. Chauncey, take it away.
So first of all, let's talk about the big play that Jamal Murray made. Huge, huge play. Now, 2 minutes, the Lakers close the gap. Look at the defense right here. There's no advantage. Good ball pressure, two guys in help position. Take a peek at AD right here. He's gonna run to get back to Joker because he needs to, but that's gonna open up an avenue and a lane for this half spin step back by Jamal Murray, a big time shot. Look at the space that he creates right here. He's able to step back, and any shooter, all he needs is a little bit of space right here. I mean, this dude is just, we talked about it, he's must-see TV. The timely plays that he makes, you talk about him 73% in the clutch. See, most people think that big shots only happen.
From three, Chauncey, from three.
From three. But most people only think that big shots only happen at the end. AD shot, 3-2-1, game time. No. This was a big, big, big shot. And it was timely, it was much needed, and that's what he does. This dude is a killer, man. You gotta love him.
Everyone always jokes and says, like, oh, well, the only thing that matters is the last 5 minutes. Well, in the last 5 minutes of the NBA, this man is averaging 73% from three. That's absurd. Like we're talking about 50% is amazing. 48%, 45% is great. 73 is in another planet that I don't think we've ever seen.
All right, guys, coming up, Jamal Murray said the Nuggets should be up 2-1, much like Richard Jefferson just said, whatever this guy's name is next to me. I mean, whoever.
It
he's bald.
Matter.
He's
it
here.
Matter.
What else can I tell you? Does Denver have the mental edge in the Western Conference Finals? That is up next on The Jump.
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today.
A little bit of an emotional hangover. You're down 20. In that third quarter there, all of a sudden it seemed.
No, it's a mismake league. You know, we had a lot of wide open shots that we didn't make tonight. It's a mismake league.
Gotta check out today's Make or Miss League, brought to you by Michelob Ultra. I'm giving Rajan a pass on that one.
100%.
I just called you Jefferson Richard.
Yeah, make it happens.
Overacting. Different from what Gilbert Arenas called you on Instagram earlier today. Murray whistled for this flagrant earlier in the game on LeBron. Zach, what are your thoughts here?
Hey, the NBA is nothing but consistent, I guess. If you get hit in the head, it's going to be a flagrant foul. If you embellish, it's still a flagrant foul. That hurts. It looks like embellishment, but it hurts when someone hits you in the head.
That's real. I don't know where this. That's real.
Yeah,
what is that, elbow across your chin?
Zach asked me earlier this year what it would feel if someone hit me across the head when I tried to play down a flagrant foul, and I have taken that point ever since. He is right. He is absolutely right. Miss everything. At the end of the shot clock, Alex Caruso throwing up a floater, and it doesn't go so well, Chance. Do you give him a pass for this? The clock was winding down.
I mean, it was a tough play right there. He should have just took a little note out of Rondo's page after Rondo shot that floater over the rim. But
over.
I guess different player, different touch, different result. But I give him a pass, though. It's all good. He's been playing good.
I mean, the clock was at 4. It wasn't like at 2. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well,
these
missed,
are all things I don't know how to do, though. So,
he misread that. He was almost out of bounds.
And Jokic wasn't going to block the shot.
Right.
Like, it's like, look, you just one more dribble, go up strong.
Make fadeaways. Again, end of the shot clock. The Joker putting on an array of moves on AD and hits the fade.
Ew. Ew.
I'm supposed to actually ask you how he makes this look easy, but it does not look easy. This looks hard.
No, his footwork, some of the things that we see, we're not even talking about his hands. We saw the tip that he had in game 2. Like, the man, like, hand and his footwork is, it literally got to be top 5 we've ever seen.
So that right foot, one-legged shot is because he had a sprained ankle and still wanted to shoot. And so that's what he worked on, and now no one can stop him when he does it.
No.
Amazing. Woo, it's beautiful.
That's
all right,
crazy.
Let's talk a little more Nuggets. They had the lead with 2.1 seconds to go in game 2 before AD hit that insane game winner. Then you go to game 3. The Nuggets were up as many as 20 points. They led for every minute of the final 3 quarters, although LA made quite the run there. So it's a really interesting question to say who has the momentum right now in this series. Jamal Murray and AD have opinions.
Like I said, we had game 2. I thought we played great in game 2, and we just had, like I said, a couple of breakdowns that really hurt us. And we feel like we should be up 2-1 right now, you know, to be honest.
Well, we're still up 2-1. We have control of the series. We just got to come out in game 4 and play our style of basketball. We can't turn the ball over. We can't put them on the line. Our defense was great in the fourth quarter. And we gotta be able to do that for all 48 minutes. We can't not play in the first 3 and then expect to win a game in the fourth.
So it's interesting. Jamal Murray says we should be up 2-1. Anthony Davis says we still have control of the series. Richard, you're on the record picking the Nuggets to win this in 7 games. Which team would you say has the mental advantage right now?
Ooh, that's tough. Well, I'm just going to say the team that's up 2-1 has the mental advantage, because ultimately, in order for the Denver Nuggets to get in front in the series, they have to win 2 games. And so, look, I'm not going to question what the mental space that the Denver Nuggets are in. They play better when they're down. We've seen it all postseason. So he's like, oh, we got one. Yeah, we're on our way. So I'm not going to question that part. But definitely, the team that is up in this series, especially with no home court advantage, that is the team. They say that they could be up 2-1. It's true. But you made defensive mistakes, and he made a big shot, and that's what the postseason is all about.
Well, I agree with you a little bit, RJ. You know, the team that's winning the series right now, 2-1, the Lakers are up. But here's the thing. The Lakers are up 2-1 with 5 championship players on their team, guys that are champions, championship pedigree. Now, Everybody says the Nuggets could be up 2-1. Yes, they could. RJ, you know this very well. If that series was tied 1-1 going into game three, there would have been a totally different focus from those Lakers coming into that game. So who knows what could have happened, but I don't think there would have no way been a letdown if you're tied 1-1. But it is what it is. I do think that the Lakers have they have control of the series right now, but I tell you what, like you said, RJ, this Nuggets team is so good with their backs against the wall, and you always have to, always have to prepare for that.
Look, I buy that the Denver Nuggets, more than maybe most teams LeBron has ever faced in the playoffs, are mentally tough and resilient down 2-0, 3-1, whatever it is. Do I buy that the Denver Nuggets have a mental edge over LeBron James' team up 2-1 in a playoff series? No, I do not. I don't buy that at all. And like Chauncey and Richard said, look, I should be a better cook. I should have gone for a run and done some exercise today. Should have. I didn't. You should be up 2-1. You're not. You're down 2-1. And so, no, I don't buy that they have a mental edge, but I buy that they are absolutely tough as hell and are not backing down from anybody.
Michael Malone made a joke before the series. I think it was a joke. He said, we're going to petition the league to start the series down 3-1. So they contend. They have this right where they want things. Obviously, the Anthony Davis shot in game two was so huge. AD, not to Chauncey's point, coming out with the same urgency in game three, especially on the boards, did not have a single rebound until the final 5 minutes, and even then only finished the game with two. Chauncey, how does that happen?
You know, I'm shocked. You know, I'm shocked. I really am. Obviously, you're guarding Joker. You're in a lot of pick and rolls a lot of times. Jokic is out on the three-point line, so AD is away from the basket. He spends a lot of time away from the basket, but it's the NBA. Most teams don't offensive rebound anymore. They might send one guy. They maybe send nobody. So you still should be able to just on accident get you seven, eight rebounds in there if you're Anthony Davis. And I'm pretty sure it's something that he'll focus on and be ready for the next game.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird, but it's not something I was really worrying about watching in real time. It's not something I worried about watching it back today. Some of them are just random weird bounces, long rebounds that go over here instead of over here. And like Chauncey said, he's out on the perimeter a lot. He's switching onto Jamal Murray a lot. Yeah, they're probably two or three he'd like to have back. He'd like to make more of an effort to him. I mean, he was tired late in the game, but this does not strike me as anything but a one-game sort of anomaly.
Guys, come on. Guys, it wasn't – Anthony Davis was a reflection of the entire Laker team. The Laker team is one of the biggest teams that we've seen in recent history. Their point guard is 6'9", 260 pounds. They got out-rebounded by 20. By 20. So, like, yeah, Anthony Davis only had two rebounds, had no rebounds the last 5 minutes. They were getting outworked, outplayed, out-hustled. They were getting grinded. They were doing everything wrong from that standpoint. There was a lack of physicality from the Lakers. There was a lack of urgency from the Lakers. That's the only way how you can explain the one superpower that the Lakers have because it's not shooting, it's not free throw shooting, it's not bench, it's not depth, it's their size. That's the one thing that everyone points to. So if the Lakers get out-rebounded by 20, that means that they're not focused on the things that they're supposed to be doing.
I mean, look, that's why it's hard, right? That's why sweeping a team is hard. That's why the teams that go, you know what, 16-1 or whatever it is through an NBA playoffs, it's rare because it is hard to keep your focus, especially once you are up two games in a playoff series. And the Lakers weren't able to close the deal last night. We'll have to see how they come out in the next game. Coming up later in this show, we are going to be pre-gaming for game four. Not pre-gaming the way I want, but still. Game four of the Eastern Conference Finals. Running back the top five Celtics Heat head-to-head plays. Well, I like that.
Ooh.
Like
that's that not, no, don't do that to my boy. My boy JT, bear down. Come on.
Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
Tonight at 8:30 Eastern, Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Ooh, I'm so excited. I'm going to be on the sidelines for this one. The Heat currently lead the series 2-1. This is going to be a brawl, fellas. NBA Countdown is going to get you started 7:30 Eastern the whole night. ESPN Deportes or your ESPN app. All right, guys, time to run it back to the best Heat-Celtics head-to-head plays ever. 9-9, Antoine Walker. Ooh. Baking in the runner from three with 0.4 on the clock.
Look at how just running over. Like, did he just tackle Paul?
Shake
he
Walker,
just ran
baby.
Through Paul.
Watch out, little Paul. Paul looking like a little defensive back out there.
Yeah, look like AD running over people last game.
Young Zach Lowe was jumping up and down on his couch for this play.
Oh, Zachary. Look at that. Just took him out.
2010, after a pair of Wade free throws to tie the game, comes up with the steal and the dunk to go up two. Then Paul Pierce lobs it up to Rajon Rondo. That sent it to overtime. There's a lot of hugging here. Watch this. Watch this, Paul and Rajon here.
Man, this game. I remember this game.
Wow, that was it.
Ooh, this was a sweet game to watch. What a play
right there.
Yeah,
they weren't expecting the lob for the point guard.
Bam Adebayo told me that he had to get a little education from Udonis Haslem on how long this rivalry and how deep it went. Well, he heard about this one. 2010 playoff. Paul Pierce hits a deep two at the buzzer.
That famous step back, Pete Pierce.
That's right.
I've seen too many of those in my day.
I've been there, Rio.
Sorry, Mario.
I've been seeing that step back since Inglewood High.
See,
right, Chuck?
See, that's why you don't just stand there with a blank look on your face. You just get your butt off that court. Nah, you're not gonna have me on some meme 20 years later, just looking blankly into the camera.
There were no memes.
No, there is now.
2011, D. Wade giving us maybe the best Euro step ever out of Chicago, Illinois.
He messed over my man.
Look at this. They drive on the other side of the road in Europe. Somebody need to tell them. Nope, wrong side of the road.
That was nasty.
Look at that. Oh, the all whites in Miami.
That used to be a great crowd right there. Woo-wee.
Yeah, it was.
Man, if this series right now was in Boston and Miami.
Don't do this to my guy.
2013, LeBron dunking all over Jason Terry. Get what has his revenge down the road, but yeah.
Oh, no. Oh.
King didn't have to
look at
him like
that. He was still mad about the Mavericks, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes.
It's okay. Look at this.
Producer Steve is talking about LeBron revenge from the 2011 finals. I'm talking about later on. Jason Terry got it back. But yes, absolutely. LeBron says, let me see that tattoo you got in 2011.
Let me see that tattoo. He showed it to him.
I love going down memory lane when it comes to that rivalry. More chapters being created tonight, Game 4 on ESPN. Zach Lowe's Things I Like and Don't Like column usually comes out on Friday, but we're special here on The Jump, so we're getting a little bit of a sneak peek today. Zach, what do you like about the Eastern Conference Finals so far?
I just like that Gordon Hayward is back. I think between Jason Tatum's ascension to stardom and the excitement about Kemba Walker, people forget how good Gordon Hayward is. I mean, he very quietly 17-7-4 this year, 50% shooting, 38% from three. Yes, he sort of gets his points in the flow now. He just finds ways to contribute, but he's really good at that. He's a really good player, and Boston is a completely different team against the Heat zone defense and otherwise. When he's in the game and he's taking the place of the Semi-Ojeley minutes and the Romeo Langford minutes and the Brad Wanamaker minutes, they're just a different team with him.
Zach, I love it. I love that as well. I mean, Gordon is a guy that can dribble, pass, and shoot. He gives you another guy that can play make. He can make shots. He can do a lot of the things that if Tatum is not having a great night, if Marcus Smart is not making those big plays, Kemba, Jaylen, you always have Gordon. He plays the right way. He's going to take matchups. He's big. He's strong. I like that he's back out there.
Yeah, it's funny. When he was coming back in the last game, I asked Brad Stevens, what's the one thing that Gordon gives you if you had to distill it down? And he said, he's our stabilizer. He said just his experience out there for those younger players makes all the difference in the world. And we saw it especially when they had to have that presence of mind to break the Heat zone. All right, Zach, so that was one thing. But what else do you like about the Celtics?
Well, just on Tatum, this guy, the scoring is impressive, the pull-up threes and all that. This guy is now slinging these crazy cross-court passes. He's getting double-digit rebounds, and Richard and Chauncey can speak to this more than me, but the true test of superstardom is you're going to have nights when you're 9 of 23, 8 of 24. Do you find a way to be a big positive on the floor every second you're there, even if you're not shooting well? And the assists, the rebounds, the defense, he was borderline all defense for me this year. That's a superstar. A guy can say, you know what, my shot's not falling as much today, but I'm going to be like Jimmy Butler. I'm going to be a net plus doing every other thing on the floor. And that's where Jason Tatum, I mean, 10 rebounds, 7 assists is like becoming routine for him.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I think that's always the key of superstar. I would tell young players, find two things that keep you on the floor. It could be rebounding and scoring. It could be defense and scoring. Like, find two things to keep you on the floor. And for superstars, it's when you're not having a good shooting night, you still find other ways to either impact the game or can still dominate the game. We've seen it with Kobe Bryant in a game 7 going out, not shooting the ball well, but getting 10, 12 rebounds. Those are the things that you need if you want to put yourself to that next level, because you can still find ways. And Jason Kidd was the one individual that taught me this, because, you know, Chauncey, you know, he could not score in a game and still dominate the game. Always find something else that can keep you in a rhythm and get you going.
What did you think were your two things, Richard?
What?
What did you think were your two things?
What do you mean, were my two things?
To keep you on the floor.
Oh, gosh. I didn't have two things. That's why I wasn't on the floor.
I didn't want to say it. I wanted to ask you.
You know what it is? I played hard. I played hard defense, and I ran fast and jumped high. That was it.
The jumping high.
But that was
jumped very high.
Yeah, so
there was
it.
A lot of
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Zach, what don't you like about this series that you've seen so far?
I'm getting a little nervous about the Heat's bench once you get past Tyler Hero. Derrick Jones Jr., Andre Iguodala, Kendrick Nunn, Kelly Olynyk. That's four guys that they haven't really got much from in this series, and particularly Nunn, Iguodala, and Jones. The Celtics are just ignoring those guys on the perimeter and clogging up the lane. And yeah, those top six from the Heat, they can win this series without contributions below them. That's how good those six guys are. But boy, would it help to get that bench back to being a net plus, to get Andre's playmaking back involved, to get Jarrett Jones rolling to the rim for dunks, to get more out of those guys. I mean, I feel bad for Kendrick Nunn. This has been a tough 6-4 months for him and adjusting to the bubble and all that. But, you know, the harder it gets, the more you're going to need a night from one of those guys, a couple of those guys.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you know, you get this deep in the season, as we all very well know, you depend on your starters, you know, to carry you. And then those bench guys, sometimes they win you a game or two. You don't know at what point in the series, but Jay Crowder's had some nights where he shot the ball very well. Iggy, I'm always giving him a pass. He's going to come up with some plays. It might not be a three-point shot. It might be a defensive stop. It might be a charge. Just winning plays at all times. And I believe that at some point in this series, those couple guys are going to step up and have a big night.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that when you talk about, they're too deep at every position. Now those three or four guys that you talked about, whether it's Kendrick Nunn, Kelly Olynyk, Derrick Jones Jr., those are the guys that you need them to you need one of those guys to start kind of impacting the game. But they're up 2-1, and those guys haven't played up to their capabilities for a variety of reasons. Again, Andre Iguodala, he's one of those guys that, even if he's not shooting the ball well, his defense, his impact in the game from that stance, even playmaking. So I'm not worried about their bench. I just think that they are going to have to pick it up, because once you get Gordon Hayward back, and this is a guy that you know over the course of the rest of the series, his game is going to continue to elevate. He's a 17-point-a-game scorer, so he's going to elevate. So that means that they're now the pressure is on that bench to also meet that elevation.
Well, while we are speaking of the Heat, I want to get to this. Here is what The Jump recommends for today. Nick Friedell's latest and greatest on ESPN.com and the ESPN app. It's entitled The Reputation of Jimmy Butler, in the words of those who played with him. There is nobody who writes better on Jimmy Butler than Nick Friedell. He talked to dozens of Jimmy's current and former teammates about the sometimes rocky, always adventurous road to the Eastern Conference Finals as the leader of the Heat. All right, and then coming up later on this show, we will discuss the Bulls hiring Billy Donovan just a couple weeks after he mutually parted ways with the Thunder. Right after this break, is Billy D a good fit for the Bulls' young core? Stick around to find out.
This week on The Neighborhood.
Well, someone over there right away.
Jay, you okay? You copy my outfit?
You copy my outfit?
I wish I did. I took a mental photo of your outfit, filed it under gorgeous.
I wish you were even taller so I could see more of your outfit. It's beautiful.
Calling optometrists. Your beauty is blinding.
I refuse to blink. It would take a moment away from witnessing your amazing outfit.
Guys?
NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC, brought to you by State Farm.
Little known fact, Jay and Jalen are still in that kitchen right now. Welcome back to The Jump. Chicago Bulls have hired Billy Donovan as their new head coach. Bulls executive VP of basketball operations, Arturis Karnišova, said, quote, "We feel Donovan's ability to help his players reach their potential, both individually and collectively, will mesh well with our roster." Chauncey, do you think Donovan is a good fit for the Bulls?
Yeah, I think they made a great hire. Billy Donovan obviously had a great year in OKC last year. He, you know, preceded any kind of expectations that they had before the season started. He coached his team up very, very well. And when you do that, you deserve an opportunity to, you know, to advance and get a better position. So kudos to Chicago. They did a very good job in hiring Billy Donovan. They have a really good young nucleus that I'm sure he's looking forward and excited to get his hands on and put his imprint on.
I'm really excited about this because I feel like I still don't know kind of stylistically what Billy Donovan stands for as a coach. You know, he walks in, he inherits the sort of last KD team. Then it's the Russell Westbrook triple-double show. Then it's Russ and PG. Then it's Chris Paul. But all that said, Oklahoma City was consistently good, and his adaptability to different kind of players, to maximizing what each of my lead players can do for me, that's an important skill. And like Chauncey said, in Chicago, he gets to mold sort of a younger team, a team without a ready-made superstar, a guy who's been a number one guy for a long time. And his track record suggests he will adapt to that. He will look at his players and find out how to get the most out of them. So I'm really excited to see him in a new place.
Yeah, no, I I'm going to echo what everybody else said. This is a very good hire. You look at Billy Donovan. He's been successful everywhere he's been, right? Like, that's just kind of who he is, and he is a very, very good coach. He's won two national championships at Florida. Then he comes to the NBA, and we all know this. College coaches don't always transfer to the NBA, but because of who he is and how he relates to players and how he's able to adjust to different coaching styles, like, if I had a vote, like, and I didn't, he would have been my vote for coach of the year. I really truly believe what he did in Oklahoma City was one of the more impressive jobs in all of sports, really, in my opinion.
Yeah, and look, I thought it was interesting that it was a mutual parting, him and Oklahoma City. He looked at what their plans were for the coming years, that was really a team that was rebuilding. It's maybe a signpost for the rest of us that some of their veterans are going to get traded away this offseason. And he decided some of the other jobs out there, including apparently this one, were more promising. I'd love to see what he's going to do with Zach LaVine. I think that's going to be a very interesting partnership. I thought Zach did a good job trying to adjust to a very forceful coach in Jim Boylan, who was not adjusting to him. And we'll have to see if he and Billy forge more of what would be a partnership instead of a top-down approach. I'm looking forward to that. All right, guys, I do now want to turn to the news in the Breonna Taylor case in Louisville. A Kentucky grand jury today indicted a single former police officer for shooting into neighboring apartments, but did not bring a charge against any of the officers for their role in Taylor's death. The grand jury said that former officer Brett Hankinson was charged with 3 counts of wanton endangerment in connection to the police raid of Taylor's home. Taylor, who was asleep when officers entered her home using a no-knock warrant during a narcotics investigation on the night of March 13th, was shot multiple times. The warrant used to search her home was connected to a suspect who didn't even live there. A lawyer for Taylor's family, Ben Crump, called the charges, quote, offensive and outrageous. NBA players have been very outspoken throughout the Orlando restart, demanding justice in this case, calling on Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron to act. Cameron did speak today at a news conference after the charges were made public. He said that the officers announced themselves and the use of force was, quote, justified to protect themselves. Reaction will continue, but here's what some of players are saying already. Donovan Mitchell, who played college ball at the University of Louisville, tweets, I don't have many words right now, but all I can say is I'm praying for the city of Louisville. Another ex-Louisville Cardinal, Montrezl Harrell, tweeting, I lived in the Ville for 3 years of my life, and it became another home for me. But wow, what is happening? These are the charges you come up with? Nothing to say, but wow. Speechless. Richard, players have been advocating on behalf of Breonna Taylor since the NBA bubble was created. How devastating is this, who wanted actual justice for her?
Well, I think it's devastating for the players, but more importantly, I think the family of Breonna Taylor. And we saw it coming. You'd have to be a little bit blind when you knew that the National Guard was going to be in Louisville and that, you know, the police were, there was no vacation, there was no nothing. Everybody was basically on call. To me, that just kind of foreshadowed that there wasn't going to be the type of charges that the public kind of wanted. And so I first and foremost think about the family. And I think that's what the devastating news is for. It's not necessarily personally, but it's more of just understanding that her family deserved justice, that Breonna Taylor deserved justice. And we're not even going to discuss the fact that it took 6 months for this to come about. And so even there, you see the lack of a speedy, you know, kind of situation and getting all the facts together. And so hopefully, you know, they can actually, you know, get this charge to stick and you know, we can start to figure out how to improve, you know, our system. I think that's the most important thing.
Man, this is very crushing, crushing news today. Obviously, like RJ said, they've been kind of setting this up for the last couple of days. You know, her family deserves a lot better. She deserved a lot better, obviously. It's just typical, you know. It's typical and it's hurtful. And as we are here trying to continue to make good and make better, you know, our communities and our societies, these type of things continue to set you back. Obviously, I'm not a prosecutor. I don't know all of what happened, but I know what I read, and I know we all deserve so much better than this. So it's just unfortunate, and I just pray. I pray for her family in all sincerity.
Yeah, there's obviously a level of shock that comes in terms of, even if they telegraphed it, as Chauncey and Richard said, there's sort of like, well, this is the story over? Does it end like this? Is this really the end of it? And I think once that shock is digested, you know, there will be action, and it'll be interesting to see what that action is. But right now, it's just a level of shock and dismay. And it's not an NBA story, you know, if the players are tweeting about it. But I do think it shows, you know, Rachel said the players have been outspoken during the restart in Orlando. I think the players have shown there's not going to have to be any qualifications going forward about during the restart in Orlando. They have taken a leadership role. They're going to keep taking a leadership role. And this is just going to be a reality of their role in the discourse is not going away. And good on them. A lot of people said, well, once they leave the bubble, they'll kick up on the couch and not pay attention and all that. Absolutely not. They've proven that's not the case.
Yeah. There's been so many times in the last months, years, decades where you have low expectations of some of these public officials and they still manage to slither right underneath it. And in this particular case, I think when this news came out today, what hit me as so hurtful, so insulting, was that the charges brought were for her neighbors. Even now, even 6 months after this happened, after all of the marching and the calls for justice and the scrutiny and the attention of this case and the power of so many people who have a voice in this country saying we needed justice for Breonna Taylor, it was the black woman who was shot in her bed who no charges were brought in connection with that. It was a charge of her neighbors where this was wanton disregard by firing a gun in a way that could have harmed them. And it is a reflection of how so many black women are seen by so many officials in this country. And I would just say that there are so many voting campaigns going on right here in this bubble by NBA players, in the WNBA bubble as well. People should vote for whoever they want, but they should keep in mind that voting is not just for the president of the United States. It is for officials who are running your state who decide the kinds of things like this today. So I would just urge everyone that no matter who you vote for, and it is a wide spectrum, please vote up and down the ballot because it really, really matters. All right, The Jump will be right back.
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today. And in part by Corona Premier. Lower carbs, lower calories, 100% Corona.
The WNBA playoffs roll on tomorrow with Game 3 of the Best of 5 semis. MVP Asia Wilson and the top-seeded Aces squaring off against the Sun at 7:30 Eastern. And then Breonna Stewart and the Storm taking on the Lynx in Game 2. Both games are streaming live on the ESPN app, so you can watch from anywhere. All right, our Chauncey Billups sat down with Heat All-Star forward Bam Adebayo in the most socially distant form possible, virtually, through AT&T 5G HoloVision. Take a listen to this.
The Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
I was very blessed, man, to play on a team that won a championship. We were really, really dominant defensively, and we shared the ball offensively. You guys remind me of that. What would you say you guys' identity is as a club?
We're versatile. You can't put any certain scheme against us and expect us not to figure it out. I feel like we got players on the team that are smart, high IQ players, and think the game. Even our young guys are starting to think the game now.
I'm not going to lie, I'm a little freaked out by how real that hologram looked.
No, it's crazy.
That's really crazy.
Trippy. All right, you can catch the rest of that combo on NBA Countdown tonight. Let's talk about the Heat because they lost Game 3, got outscored 60-36 in the paint. Zach, what is the biggest adjustment they can make in Game 4 tonight?
Number one, stay the course with the zone. I think there's a perception the Celtics solved the zone, and they did something better in game four than they had before, in game three, sorry. But they can go back to it. I think it's effective. Number two, the Celtics are trying to keep Kemba Walker out of the main action on defense. They're even putting him on Tyler Hero sometimes, trying to hide him there. Engage him. Tyler Hero is really good. Don't let Kemba Walker just sit on an island out there.
Yeah, I like where you went right there, Zach. I was going to say pretty much the same thing. I think in games one and two, the Heat did a terrific job of changing defensive schemes. They put that zone out there. You throw off the rhythm of Miami's offense. You have guys guarding the perimeter. And they did a good job of changing man-to-man zone. You got the big guys up on the zone. I think they got to see a little bit more of that tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to say that they should really pick up the pace. Keep playing at a very, very fast pace because as the Boston Celtics, they don't go very deep. We know that. And so your stars, well, Gordon Hayward coming back does help eliminate some of those minutes. But ultimately playing fast and picking up the pace of the game, that's going to help kind of wear down the Boston Celtics. And I think the Miami Heat are still a little bit deeper, so that'll help.
The Heat were a little more tired than I expected at the end of game three. They will be rest after 3 days.
Well, don't get down by so much. Don't get down by so much. You won't have to work so hard.